My name's Steve Carroll. Some of you might be thinking, who's he? Coming to this church, me, my wife and I, for 20 years, and we've been away, but we're back again, so tough. The other thing I just need to say is that last time I spoke in Maybridge, they were using overhead projectors, so I might get a bit of a problem with the tech here, but I'll try and muddle along. So we're going through this this series in Matthew, and the title is The Radical King, Transformation Through the Story of Jesus. And the title of my message this morning is Glorify God by Getting Along. And I'll explain what I mean by that as we go along. Let's look at the chapter, the text that we're going to be looking at. It's Matthew 18, 1-6, if you're following in your Bibles. And I'll read this with you. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name," I think we're going to move on. Oh, yeah, someone's done it for me. "And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung round their neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea." Welcome. I want to just go through being a teacher. I've got 3 points I want to look at. And after my message, we're going to have some questions. So if there's anything on this that you have an opinion on that you'd like to express, you can discuss it in your groups and there'll be a chance to feedback. But the 3 headings I've got is the context, which is the disciples arguing over who is the greatest. Then the example of the child, which is very fitting when we've got this little angel down here. And finally, a warning, because there's this very serious message here as well. So let's first of all start in terms of the context, which is the disciples arguing. I'd like to give a little, tell you a little story. Back in the 1980s, my wife and I had a design company which was doing well at the time. The 1980s was the design decade, so everything was designy. You design a stubble, design a kitchens, design everything. And we did up our living room, and we had these lovely curtains which we imported in from Germany, and they were based on the paintings of an artist called Gustav Klimt, who some of you may know, and they were very beautiful, very colourful curtains. And then I had this idea. We had curtains each end of the room, and I thought in the middle of the room it'd be really nice to have a tank of tropical fish, and for those tropical fish to pick out the colours in the curtains. I thought, what's his name? Llewellyn Bowen, what's his name? Would love that. And so I went across to the local garden centre, which had a fish retail bit, and I was looking around at all these tropical fish, okay? And I was thinking, right, making a note of them, and a young assistant came along and said, "Hello there, sir, can I help you?" And I said, "Yes. I'd like one of those, two of those, two of those, and one of those." And he went, "I'm sorry, sir, I can't sell you those fish." And I said, "Why ever not? I want one of those red ones, two of the orange ones, two of the blue ones, and the green one to match our curtains." To which he said, "I can't sell you those fish, sir." And I said, "Well, whatever's the matter? My money's as good as anybody else's." And he said, "Because if I sell you those fish and you put them in a tank, they will eat each other." And I tend to think of the church as being a bit like that. You see, here we have, you know, if you want to know, church history is full of people arguing, isn't it? Come on, it is. And it's constant controversy, constant people arguing. And it started off right at the beginning when Jesus called the disciples. And here they are having an argument over who is the greatest. Now, I think to myself, wouldn't it be a lot different if Jesus had taken along a human resources manager with their clipboard? And gone along and said, right, and you call Peter, yes, okay, I understand where you're going with this, right, okay. And then you call Matthew, not a good idea. Why is that wrong demographic? You know, wrong personality type. I think you've got the team, you've got to get this all to match together. But he didn't do that. And, you know, I mean, people have said to me things like, you know, Steve, have you ever thought of starting a church? You're an artist. Have you thought of starting a church just for artists? And I thought, yeah, everybody is badly organised as me. I mean, can imagine if the church was just everybody was all the same. We all dressed the same, okay? We all supported the same football team, Chelsea. And we all had the same hobbies, making balsa wood aircraft. We all liked the same music, reggae. And, you know, and we're all the same nationality, basically, you know. And then if somebody came into the church, they'd say, oh, well, I can tell why you get on. Oh, you all like making balsa wood models of, you know, I can see, oh, you all like the same music. But when somebody comes in and actually they see us of different races, different faces, different personality types, different interests, some people support Liverpool, you come in and they think, well, you know, this is really different. What binds you people together? What binds us together? We all love Jesus. And that the centre of our lives is this loving God. And this love is just so indiscriminate. He just throws it out. He just gets everybody in together. It doesn't matter. You come on in. You follow me. And it's so indiscriminate. It's so big. It's so huge. Everybody is invited. And when we get on, we glorify God because they see we're about God, not about our football team or whatever. And Jesus said, men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So there's all these different people, it's all coming together, but they're arguing. So let's move on to the second one, because how does Jesus actually address this? Well, first of all, he gives us an example. He called a little child to him and placed the child in among them. Now, in Mark's gospel, it actually says he placed the child and he actually picked the child up, which suggests the child was very young, a toddler. And he came along with this toddler and he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Now, I just want to, you know, it's very easy. We all know this. It's quite a nice, sweet, you know, cute story, isn't it? Be like little children. That's nice. Finger painting, you know, it's lovely. I think there was something really bothering me about this. Okay, so you've got the disciples, okay, and they're following Jesus. Jesus is performing miracles. He's talking with the same authority as God, something that the other priests and rabbis would never do. He's, you know, seems to be fulfilling all these prophecies in the ancient scriptures. He's absolutely incredible, and the disciples are arguing amongst them who's the greatest. I mean, how childish. So what does Jesus do? He says, brings a child, and he says, you must become like this child. Have you ever had children? You almost could think that's the worst thing you could actually do. You know, you know, so you're behaving childish. Oh, you should be like this child. Now, I absolutely love children. I love it when at the end of the, you know, my boys, when they grew up here, at the end of the service, their favourite part of church was they take their shoes off and they go across the polished floor, skidding over. That was great, you know. I love the way you can make children laugh. I love the innocence of children and all this type of thing. But I'm going to say something now, and I'm going to say something that's quite hard for me to say. And just bring the tone down a little bit, is the fact that I don't think that the way people saw children in the first century was how we see them. I think it was very, very different. You've look, you only just go back my lifetime, okay? I'm 62. I was a teenager in the 70s. In 1972, I got the slipper at school whacked across both hands because I had bad handwriting. I'm not quite sure what that was going to do to my handwriting. But you young people, you think that's barbaric, don't you? It was, I'll tell you, it was. And, we've changed even with our own lifetimes, our attitudes towards children. If you go back only 100 years or so, there was no contraception, there was no family planning, there was hardly any medical science. And the simple fact is that life was hard and there was a lot of infant mortality. And people found it, going back only 100 years and then further, harder to invest emotions in children if we didn't know how long they were going to live. Now, that's hard for me to say because I know, the situations. But I think we've got to look back and think in terms of how people saw children thousands of years ago. 2,000 years ago, they would have looked at having children as being a risky business. Women could die in childbirth. Children were often brought in without any control. They were brought into the world in order to keep the family name going, in order to keep the family business going, and also in order for them to look after you when you were old. It was a far more utilitarian than a sort of romantic approach towards children. So when we look at Jesus talking about children, it's not this cuteness. I think it's things like this. It's things like obedience. Weren't we all, some of us are older, we were actually quite scared of adults, weren't we? I was scared of my grandparents. We were. You were obedient, you were in awe of adults, you were aware of your powerlessness, and most of all, it's the innocence of childhood. I think those are the things that Jesus is talking about. You know, when you're a kid, you are in awe of the world. You'd go, you'd be in the back of your dad's car, and he'd be driving through a town, and you'd see all these office buildings, and you go, oh, what goes on there? Is it like school? What do these people do, all these grown-ups? And then you go past a power station or something. How does that work? It's amazing. It's huge. Now, when you're an adult, you go past an office building, you say, oh yeah, who did they have to backstab to get that job? What part of the third world are they exploiting? You know, you go past a power station and you think, oh yeah, electricity price is going up. We've got this cynical approach that we develop as we become adults, whereas children have a much more in awe approach to everything. I was in New York a month or so ago. I always wanted to go there. And you're walking around New York City and you suddenly feel like a child again. You're going, whoa, why? What's this all for? You suddenly feel small. And I think it's this smallness, this being in awe, this being in respect of other people that I think Jesus is talking about. There's another place I was thinking about where the New Testament talks about our attitude being like children, and it's in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 20, where Paul is addressing a controversy in the church. It's about spiritual gifts, which is still a controversy in the church, and and he's talking about your attitude towards this, and he says, in regard to evil, be infants, but in your thinking, be adults. In regard to evil, be infants, but in your thinking, be adults. And I think this is the difference, isn't it, between being childlike and childish. In regard to evil, be infants. Do you know, the room next door is called the Wayland Room. And some of us know why that is. There were a lovely couple in this church called Ron and Daphne Wayland, and they were absolutely fantastic, real pillars of the church. And my wife and I were talking to them once, and just as an aside, they said, we turn the television off at 9 o'clock. And the reason is because at 9 o'clock it's the watershed, and it's not advisable. They advise not to let children see TV after 9 o'clock because it's all going to be about sex and violence and stuff like that. And they thought, well, if it's not appropriate for children, it's not appropriate for us. Now, I'll just throw that out. Don't look at me as an example. I'm still in the middle of Stranger Things episode, series 4, okay? But I just throw that out, as that's how Ron and Daphne took this teaching. So we looked at being a child, and finally we're going to look at a warning. And first of all, Jesus says, "And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." Jesus identified in this illustration with the child. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a child being shouted at or being mistreated in the street. And you probably have strong emotions. There's sometimes in our society we think, well, we don't get involved. It's somebody else's matter. But if that was your child, you would go ballistic. Come on. You'd have very, very strong emotions. I know I have had very, very, very strong emotions for my boys when they were young. And this is how Jesus feels. He actually feels that about you. If somebody abuses you and you're a follower of Christ, you're his child. He really feels very, very strongly, okay? Now, that is the context the next part I'm going to read is in. The strength of feeling that he has for you. And then he goes on and he says, "If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." Now we're going to, that is a very, very hard sentence to read from the lips of Jesus. I heard recently on, I often listen to sermons and stuff like that on YouTube, and I came across this is a progressive Christian teacher who said this is what he does. When he goes into the Old Testament, he always takes Jesus with him. And he goes in and he says, when he sees one of those nasty stories in the Old Testament about judgment being inflicted upon a people, and he says to Jesus, "What do you think of that, Jesus?" And Jesus says back to him, "Well, what do you think?" And he says, "Well, I don't like it, Jesus." And so Jesus says back to him, "Well, neither do I." And so instead of us being transformed, which is what this series is about, transformed into the likeness of Jesus, we do something else. We transform Jesus into a glove puppet. And the glove puppet just nods. Whenever we don't like something or whatever our attitude is, he just nods at us. He just agrees with us. We're never going to be transformed into the likeness of Christ if we just get Jesus to agree with us and that we're not challenged by him. Now, I would like to have taken that progressive Christian teacher to the New Testament and to the Gospels and to this verse here. "If anyone causes one of these little ones to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." This is very, very hard talking, and it is the language of judgment that he's actually pronouncing, he's actually speaking to his disciples about. Now, I know you've there's one way in which I think, you know, I've never gone to a Christian and said, you know, "It's all right, go and nick stuff from Marks and Spencer's." You know, I've never told anybody to actually burn down a public building. You know, I've never made them stumble like that. But there is a way in which I have made them stumble. I'm going to tell you a bit of a silly illustration. When I became a Christian, it was in 1979. I was in my first year at art college, and the Sex Pistols were still around. And I grew up in that post-punk sort of movement. And I had I went to a Calvinistic Reformed church, okay, lots of people, very serious, all in grey suits, and I turned up in these straight leg corduroys, which I could get into, Leona, and I had odd socks. One was fluorescent green and one was fluorescent pink. And I went in, just become a Christian, man, you know what I mean? You know, this is very, very trendy. It was then, anyway. And the next week, I had this thing going on where all these mothers were coming up to me and saying, "Do you realise the trouble I've had with my son this week?" And I said, "What?" I said, "Oh, every time they go to school, they want to put odd socks on." And I tell them off and they said, "Well, Stephen does it and he goes to art college." Now, what I'm saying that, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with dressing strangely, Matt. But What I am saying is this. That's just an example. Well, but what is shocking is how you can so easily be an example one way or the other. Now, I know that as a professing Christian, I have not been a good example to the people around me. I know that I have said wrong things. Sometimes it's my sense of humour. It's not appropriate. Sometimes, you might get angry and you express anger in the wrong way. Or sometimes you talk about things and actually you think to yourself, well, actually, perhaps that wasn't the best thing to do. You see, when you, as a mature Christian, I've been a Christian 43 years. And, what it means is people who are younger than you or people who are younger than you in the faith, they look at you and they say, oh, it's all right. I can do that. Doesn't matter if I use a rude word. Steve Carroll does. You know, it's okay if I do that. They do it. You're being a bad example. You're almost giving permission to not behave in a Christ-like manner. And in that way, I believe you can make people stumble. And Jesus' words about that are very, very harsh. But I'm so glad that it doesn't end there, because the Christian story doesn't end there at all. The Christian story goes on to the cross of Jesus Christ. And just as Jesus talked about us having a weight tied around our necks, it was Jesus who took that millstone around his neck, that millstone of guilt, that millstone of sin, that millstone of punishment for sin. He took it upon himself when he died on the cross. And he took it upon himself and it died with him. So that anybody who believing in him, following him, trusting in him, repenting and turning to him, your sin is done away with. There is a second chance. And I would just say, if any of you, because this is very serious, if any of you have know that you've caused somebody to stumble, you haven't behaved in the right way, maybe you have sinned against another Christian and so they sinned against you in return. Any of this, if that's you, there is forgiveness. And I would just ask you, before this day is out, just come to God, acknowledge what you've done, and know that there is forgiveness through the blood of Christ. Maybe you want to speak to somebody with one of those green, Waitrose tags, the prayer, and you want to pray with them, or you may want to do it privately. But I do ask you, just, sort this out with God. And let us be different. Let us be different. Wrong way. So, we've looked at the context. Arguing, pulling each other apart, showing off, saying who's greater than whoever. Let's not be like that. Let us be like children. Let us look at the example of children. Let's spend some time thinking that through, working on that. And let's take this warning seriously. Let's be good examples to each other. Let's not sin against each other. Let's not cause each other to stumble. And let's build up the church so that people would say, I know that these people are Christ's disciples because they love each other. Thank you.
There's some questions on the screen which relate to what Steve just talked about. If you're comfortable with discussing these, then please turn to the next person next to you. Just have a chat over these for a moment. And they are, in what ways do we compare ourselves with other believers, considering ourselves greater in the kingdom? So what are the ways practically that as Christians sometimes we sort of feel like we're better than other people and we shouldn't do it? Secondly, what do you think of the example of the small child that was in the passage, the positive example? How could you model that in the church and in daily life? And then thirdly, in what ways can we cause fellow believers to sin? What are some of the wrong things that we do that sort of pull people in the wrong direction? Just for our personal, what we're aware of that we do ourselves.